WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
You don't have to be a big spender to be a big fan of public television's Wall Street Week. Every week, 10 million viewers tune in to find out about the state of the economy and to watch Louis Rukeyser, the show's witty and irreverent host. Rukeyser has managed to make the often dry topic of business and finance entertaining. Rukeyser began his career in the newspaper business as an overseas correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. He's been the host of Wall Street Week since it first went on the air in 1970. He's also a big draw on the lecture circuit and editor of a new reference book called Louis Rukeyser's Business Almanac. When we spoke, I asked him about the success of Wall Street Week. He says the show is popular for some deceptively simple reasons.
I can only tell you the three things that I try to do, and then you'll know my secrets and you can do it too.
Oh, great.
First is, you have to speak English. Now that.
Well, what do you mean by that?
You can't use polysyllabic jargon. You can't hide behind the professional-sounding baloney that people use to hide the fact that they don't really know what they're talking about. Also, to intimidate other people. Doctors are wonderful at that, as well as economists.
And politicians, I guess we should add.
Sure, the gobbledygook of the trade. So you got to speak in something resembling the English language. Second, having spoken in English, there's a high probability that many people will understand what you said. Therefore, it's helpful if you have some knowledge of what you're talking about. We have now, with those two rules, eliminated virtually everything on the air. But you go to number three, which is you've got to do it with a little bit of flair.
Well, you seem to have a kind of bemused approach to money and to finances, to the economy. And I suppose it's easy to have a bemused approach to someone else's money. But do you have that also for your own?
I always try and figure that it's just your money, not your life. I have a respect for money. Don't misunderstand me. I don't think that money should be denigrated. I think much of the recent talk about greed in the U.S. has been greatly overdone. It's usually somebody else's emotion we're talking about. I find that most people individually can justify their own personal self-advancement. It's just the other guy who wants more than he should have. But I don't think that money's everything, and I don't think that to know about money equates with being obsessed with money. And I think the best way to keep money in perspective is to have some, manage it intelligently, and then go on to the next thing.
What do you think makes a good guest on your particular show? And I would think in certain ways that because of the power of business, that rather than speaking to an audience, that the guests are either speaking to each other or speaking to each other's companies or in some way trying to create some kind of financial environment that they can then take advantage of.
Well, it depends on the guest. Many of them do have that instinct. We really have four different kinds of guests, and they each have their own motives and their own usefulness to our audience. The first is kind of the obvious one, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Nobel Prize winner. It doesn't take a genius to know that our audience is going to be interested in this person. The second is money managers or advisors of great reputation or great achievement. And in the former case, we try and audit them. And in the second case, we try and learn something from them. The third is your nuts and bolts show. We do about one a month like that. And the producer and I will talk and we'll decide which group we're going to do, and then his job is to find the best person on hotel and restaurant companies in America. The fourth is mavericks and critics, people who say the wheel is rigged, the earth is flat, the game's not fair. And we have great shows with those people too. Many people, of course, overlap categories. One famous newsletter writer who heard me say something like this once said, to me afterwards, said, "Lou, I was kind of a nuts and bolts guest, wasn't I?" And I said, "I would regard you as a bolt."
But you must get some nuts too, right?
Mm.
I mean, that's in part
plenty of nuts
make the show interesting.
Interestingly, in terms of the guests and in terms of money generally, the most reliable are usually the ones who have a little humility. The ones who are the best heavy hitters over the years are really essentially modest people. They're the first to tell you that they make mistakes, they pick stocks that go down, they judge markets wrong, but that they have certain principles they try and stick with, and that seems to give them a pretty good batting average. On the other hand, when some hotshot flash comes along and tells you he has called the last 43 turns of every market in the world, you know instantly you're dealing with a charlatan.
I know that you've had many awards, and several that rather interested me, and I suppose I'm not sure I would call these awards, but I think it was Playboy magazine called you a rakish raconteur, and People magazine said that I think it was in a dismal business that you were the one and only sex symbol. And I'm wondering how you wear those accolades.
I think they're a giggle, and so do my three daughters. The Playboy thing was kind of funny. They've now done several pieces on me, including the main interview last year, and then about 5 years before that, what they call 20 Questions, which is their secondary interview. And for that one, they illustrated with one full-page color photograph. And the photo they had of me was of me sitting in the pool reading the Wall Street Journal. And after he'd taken it, the photographer said to me, "Lou, you don't know how good this picture is." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "The way you're holding the paper, no one will ever know whether or not you have a stitch on underneath." He said, "You've just done a parody of every picture that ever appeared in Playboy magazine." So I said, "Well, I've read the magazine. I know what I say at this point. I say, I'm an Aquarius. I can't stand phonies. I hope someday very much to be a nurse. And my idea of a perfect evening is to curl up on a shag rug with that certain someone."
Well, how much of looking and understanding the economy is art, and how much is science?
There's a little bit of both, but it's still an art. There is some science. I think it's important to know the facts, to know what's going on, to have some sense of where the economy is heading in this country. But beyond that, the day-to-day act of investing has to be an art. And those who try and make it a science are forever being frustrated. Some of the best so-called technical market analysts, the fellows who really try and make a science out of it, feel frustrated because they can't quite find that one last indicator that would make it a science. And the reason they can't is the same reason that economists generally miss fire so often in their forecast for the economy, which is we're talking about hundreds of millions of human beings.
That's right.
And human beings do not always do what the graphs and charts and the mathematicians say they should do. I think that's kind of wonderful.
Well, you're talking about human beings and their money. I mean, it's a loaded proposition.
Well, in Wall Street, the emotions, of course, the key human emotions are fear and greed. They're forever in conflict. Greed to get a little more money, fear that if you don't cash in now, you're going to lose it all. And in the ongoing battle, interestingly, despite all the recent obsession in our movies and elsewhere with so-called greed, I think fear is the stronger emotion. We saw that again last October, where we had what is generally referred to as the crash. I prefer to call it the one-day nervous breakdown. And
there's a difference?
Oh, yes, because if I had come to you on your program 9 months ago, right after Wall Street fell 508 points in one day, and said to you, "Marty, 9 months from now, the economy, if anything, will be in better shape than it is now. There'll be more people working. Corporate profits will be up, not down. Not only will we not be in a depression, but the unemployment rate will be the lowest in 14 years. The trade deficit will be moving down." You'd probably have said, "Who invited this loon? And what kind of a Pollyanna am I talking to this morning?" But I think there are innate strengths to this economy, to the American people generally. This country is still a land blessed with natural resources, including the people. And I have a feeling that we're not just going to endure, but that we're going to prosper. I think we're beginning to get a little more sensible. 20 years ago, I came back from overseas, and I've been covering economics now nonstop for 20 years. And at that point, the country was anti-business. Certainly, the intellectual atmosphere, corporate was a dirty word. Profits were obscene. Daddy was a rotten fascist materialist. And besides, where's the check for my stereo? And then in the '70s, we found out that if you ignore business, if you spend all your time attacking it, if your only patron saint is Ralph Nader, that you will hurt business. You will indeed impede business progress, but it won't help the average guy. Because as business profits go down, as the country goes into repeated recessions, unemployment goes up, living standards go down. So in the 80s, I think we've muddled through ideologically to a little less ideology, a little more realism. I think that the country now doesn't want to hear what's liberal or conservative, wants to hear what works. And that, I think, is the beginning of economic wisdom. I don't think we have solved all our problems. I don't think the 90s are going to be a glorious problem-free era in America. But I think there is every reason to believe with the demographic changes we've talked about, with more women in the workforce for a longer time, with some of these other things that we talk about in the book, that the country not only will be as good in the 90s, but will be a more prosperous economy.
Well, Louis Rukeyser, thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Louis Rukeyser is the host of Public Television's Wall Street Week and editor of a new book, Louis Rukeyser's Business Almanac, published by Simon & Schuster. This is Fresh Air.